Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right. Welcome back to the show. And we got, say it every week, but it really is this time. We got a great one lined up. I'm pumped. I usually am. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us for what is unquestionably the most scintillating hour of finance radio. The tariff scenario that we've got going on, unlike CNN and MSNBC, I can't even say it. You know why? Because it's vile. It burns my tongue. Unlike those liberal echo chambers, though, we like to hear the other side of it. Because in investing, and this is what we talked about last week, and we're talking about all the time, right? Whenever we hear and I hear it on other radio stations, too. Other radio shows, these finance guys get on, they're going to tell you how it is. You know what? Nobody really knows how it is, right? The job is to get it right. Leave your bias at the door. Get it right. You don't get paid well for not getting it right. You might have the best sounding thesis in the world, but if you don't get it right in this business, it doesn't matter. And so they, you know, in our estimation, it's Trump start. We've been in a trade war with China for 25 years. We just now noticed. And the tariffs, if anything, people go, well, I like free trade. Well, then you should love the tariffs. They go, what do you mean? That's not free trade. Well, yeah, but it's fair trade because they're tariffing our goods. And I, for one, am tired of them sucking jobs and capital out of this country and doing it at the expense of the American people, stealing our IP. Right? These are all real things. And the funny thing is, if you're in the world of finance, you know it. I mean, this week, Lloyd Blankfein, did you see this, Jer? I know you're paying attention to Lloyd Blankfein, right? But former CEO of Goldman Sachs, not exactly a Trump loyalist. But I was impressed because he came out and said, look, you know, he's kind of sheepish about it because he doesn't want to. He still wants to get invited to the Manhattan cocktail parties. He wants to go to the Met Gala every year. He can't ruffle their feathers too much. But he said, you know, hey, I think he's got it right on this whole tariffs thing, this tariff thing. And I just, if we can look at it with fresh eyes, look at it for what it is, I think people would acknowledge, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And not only does it make sense, I think he's playing it perfectly. But anyway, I don't want to blow our wad here and get out ahead of it. We're going to talk about this at length with Luke Grohman. There's too many other things to discuss that we got to squeeze in here in 30 minutes. So let's start, as always, with the market update. What is going on? So listen, I think that what you're seeing in markets right now, not to, you know, and everybody's beating this drum all the time. I think what you're seeing in markets right now is just a lot of algorithmic trading back and forth. We're still trapped in this range. S&P today is sitting at 2876. Remember, we were at 2873 last January. We were as low as 2800. Just a couple days ago. That was the level of last November. So a lot of emotions. It's been a heck of a ride. But here we are. We made a round trip, right? I think it's kind of interesting to note that earnings, the first quarter of this year, earnings were slightly down. They were slightly down from the previous quarter. One would think that that would have a bit of an impact on the market, but honestly, earnings haven't mattered for about 5 years now. So they're going to matter at some point. I was laughing this week, and I'm getting off course. It happens. But I was laughing this week because I was talking to Chase Taylor, the head of Pinecone Macro Research. Great guy. We've had him on the show before. Brilliant, brilliant macroeconomic guy. And we were talking about how some of these analysts and some of these firms are coming out with new valuation metrics. We can't look at profit. We've got to weight revenue growth higher. And we've got to take into consideration eyeballs. They literally said the term eyeballs. Now, why I think that that's so amazing is that was the new metric. The new metric with air quotes. I do this in the studio like they can see what I'm doing, right? But anyway, I got the air quotes going on. But the new metric in the tech bubble was eyeballs. We can't value these companies based on revenue and profits. We got to look at eyeballs. That's the new metric. And these people, they're literally doing it again. Talking about, well, it's, you know, you can't look at just the balance sheet. You got to look at the eyeballs. What's the possible advertising rate? You know, just it's just nonsense. So anyway, let's start there. And we should probably start doing a weekly segment called the Overvalued Junk of the Week. So maybe we'll call the market update that this week. This is the Overvalued Junk of the Week story. But if you're sitting back there, now remember, we got to separate politics and finance. If we think that the stock market is overvalued and that valuations are ridiculous, for the most part, right? There's exceptions always. But if we think valuations are ridiculous, that's not a knock on Trump. That's not saying that the economy's bad. That's just saying that, look, that stock could go up still. But on a valuation basis, it just doesn't make any sense. And if you've listened to the show, you remember us having that conversation about Boeing, just saying, look, you know, nothing against company, nothing against product, but everything is priced in. This thing is priced to perfection. If anything goes wrong, the stock's going to get rocked. What happened? Plane crash, and then boom, stock dropped 25 to 30% in the course of 2 or 3 weeks. Within like 2 weeks after we aired that show. And I'm not laughing or making light of plane crashes, but I'm just saying, like, this is the reality of this business that everybody forgets when things are good. So a perfect example of this, one of the best performers of the week is Walmart. Everybody's fired up about Walmart. And they posted some pretty nice numbers. They had some good revenue growth, and it kind of caught my eye. And I thought, you know, I haven't looked at Walmart for a while. Let me go check it out. So I pull up the screen, and first thing I notice is the valuation, the price-to-earnings ratio, right? That's probably the most basic valuation metric that people are the most, you know, it's the most widely disseminated, most widely used. You know, it's just kind of part of the zeitgeist of finance, if you will. You know, it's, what's the PE ratio, right? And for those of you that don't know, what price to earnings really is, remember, everybody gets excited about revenue growth. Revenue does not pay investors. Profit does, right? It's just like owning a business. I have $8 billion of revenue, but I could still lose $500 million in cash. And if you want an example, go look at Tesla. The hits on Tesla. Oh, by the way, hey, guys, I did not lose my mind. We had a lot of really funny feedback about Tesla. I didn't become a Tesla bull. I didn't lose my mind. There are some interesting things going on with that company. And I think that if you, anytime you're just, you know, going back to Orwell, anytime it's just four legs good, two legs bad, again, you know, we're not pundits. We're investors. We got to get it right regardless of what we think. And that's why we aired that with the Tesla guy. I just wanted to show the other side of the story and say, hey, we could be wrong. Believe it or not, I think I'm the only guy in finance radio or on Twitter, certainly, that's ever had a bad trade. If you listen to these guys, everybody's a Druckenmiller and a Buffett. They're just going to tell you all the stuff that you write. But anyway, getting back to Walmart. So I digress. But getting back to Walmart, so I started looking at the price earnings. Oh yeah, I was talking about the price earnings. See, Jerry, you're getting me off course here. You got to blame it on the producer. Yeah, I got to get bring the millennial back. Get him back in here. those are things you don't say often, right? No knock to you millennials out there. I love you guys. Anyway. Price to earnings ratio, though, what we're doing is we're looking at the price of the stock and we're evaluating it based on the earnings and we're breaking them down per share. So saying, hey, if we buy this share of this company, this is our stake. This is what we're getting for it, right? That's the earnings. And we look at, so we're just dividing the price of the stock by the earnings and then the number of shares to see what the earnings per share is, or EPS. And then that number is the price to earnings ratio. And typically, the long-term average of the S&P as a whole is right around 15.8 to 16, right in there, price-to-earnings ratio on the entire market. And we're significantly higher than that. I think we're like 21 right now or something like that, which is very elevated. And people go, oh, that's not that expensive. Well, that's just one valuation metric. There's a lot of others to look at. And that's about 30% higher, 40% higher than average. And all the other valuation metrics that we look at are at records, just across the board. But anyway, as it relates to Walmart, the first thing I noticed, now remember, the long-term average of the S&P 500 price-to-earnings ratio is about a 16. I pull up Walmart stock the other day, they're sporting a 45 PE. And my first thought was, okay, there's got to be some kind of anomaly. There was a one-time charge-off this quarter that's making it look falsely inflated, all that kind of stuff. Well, I start going through the balance sheet and the cash flow statement and looking at it and going, oh no, there was no one-time charge-off. They're sporting a 45 PE. And then I started reading the press release, and they're getting into web advertising, and they're launching this, and they're launching that, and they're talking about how great it's going to be. And I just started laughing because I sat there and I went, this is Walmart. This is Walmart. Now all of a sudden it's a tech story. Did you guys know that? Did you know that, Jer? Walmart is now a tech company. They're growth, high growth. Anyway, it gets crazier. So what I started looking at, and I looked at the last 3 years and I went, wow, Walmart's up 50% over the last 3 years. It's a pretty good run for a company like Walmart, right? But then I went to the income statement, and it was one of those things where I had to look at it two or three times because I couldn't believe my eyes. Stock had gone from 73 to 105, which is, it's right around 50%. And then I looked over that same period of time, earnings had gone from $14.2 billion to $7.1 billion. So while the price of the stock rose 50%, profits declined by 50%. Now, that in and of itself isn't a fire alarm type scenario. You like how I worked that fire alarm? For those of you who don't know, we just had a fire alarm here in the radio. I'm assuming all of you don't know, because you're not here. But anyway, that in and of itself isn't alarming. I mean, it's kind of odd, right? But it amazed me. So Walmart is saying the reason that their profits have dropped is they're now reinvesting, right? They're investing in the company, which I'm sure is true, right? But remember how we talked about the Amazoning of the market? We've talked about this for the last 2.5, 3 years. The Amazoning of the market, meaning that everybody wants to focus on revenue growth as opposed to profits, because revenue growth is a lot easier when you're not trying to make a profit, right? If you're in business and the goal is just to get the revenue as high and you're not worried about profit, that makes things a lot easier. I mean, profit's sort of the point. Right? I was trying to explain this to a client the other day where I said, listen, I don't really care what the revenue is, because revenue doesn't pay investors. Profit does. Right? You could have all the revenue in the world, and if you don't cut a profit, no one's getting paid. And it makes sense what Walmart's doing, because they're looking around, looking at these Amazon companies, they're looking at these tech companies that are trading at 60 times sales, which is laughable. This is tech bubble type area. And now they're all pivoting. They're all saying the same thing. WeWork, another company, high-flying, ridiculously valued dumpster fire that's just a bankruptcy waiting to happen. It's saying the same thing. Hey, we burned $419 million of cash this quarter, but it's investments. We're investing. That's like the new catchphrase, so they don't have to be accountable for profits. So anyway, so looking at Walmart, and I just sat there and laughed out loud. Not Walmart, the behemoth, is sporting a 45 multiple. It's valued more highly than Microsoft. It's valued more highly than Google, Walmart. And during its time of its stock rising 50%, its profits declined during the same period of time by 50%. If you were going to encapsulate this market in one story, that'd be it. It just defies logic. You just sit there and go, this stock could keep going up. I don't know what in the world. Hey, try explaining that to investors. Hey, why'd we have a bad quarter? Well, because I bought Walmart at a 45 PE. Why would you do that? Because I thought it was going to go up. They were investing. You can't make this stuff up. And now the other, to the IPOs, the other funny ones, Zoom Technologies. We've talked about this one. And You know, nothing against the companies either. Same thing about Boeing. Nothing against the company. But Zoom technology is basically a competitor to Skype. They're not changing the world. This isn't revolutionary stuff. Right? It's video conference calling. And they had $330 million of revenue last year. Their stock hit a $22 billion market cap yesterday. $22 billion. Now, what's funny is in their IPO, their prospectus they released, they said that their addressable market. Now, remember, this is the prospectus, right? This is when you're showing up to the dance, right? You're putting on your best suit. You're dressing your Sunday best. That's what the IPO is. And the prospectus is honest, but you're putting your best shine on everything. And in the prospectus, they said that their addressable market was as much as $43 billion. Well, their stock's already worth more than half of that. So that means that to think that it's a profitable investment or a good investment, you got to believe that they're going to permanently lock down 60% of that market. A market that's currently dominated by Skype. You can't make this stuff up. Then we've got the vegan burger, Beyond Meat, that came out. Everybody's excited about that. They did $80 million in sales. Now, remember, they make a vegan burger patty. Okay? Stock's up 230%, I want to say, since the IPO. We were actually planning on investing it. It IPO'd at like 22, 23. We were watching it. We were going to try to jump in there below 30 because we thought it'd get a run. Well, yesterday it hit 92. It went up 130%. We went to go buy it, and I went, oh, geez, it's already at 48. I mean, it blew past our entry point by a mile right out of the gates. But they make a vegan burger patty. Our analyst actually bought a couple of them, said they were really good, said they actually tasted like burgers. He said I was surprised. But there's no intellectual property. There's no moat around that business. McDonald's is trying to develop their own. They've got other competitors out there. It is what it is. And their stock hit a $6 billion market cap yesterday with $80 million of revenue. You can't make this stuff up. And I got to tell you, honestly, I think the economy is still doing fine, especially compared to everybody else in the globe, right? I mean, we're still the cleanest dirty shirt. But I'm beginning to worry about valuations because we're getting into tech bubble areas here. And markets don't have to have a recession to collapse, guys. Go look at 99 and 2000. A recession did not pop the tech bubble. Valuations popped the tech bubble. It just got to a point where it was so ridiculous, everybody just said, yeah, I'm out of here. And we're getting that frothy. That's where we're at. Now, am I talking impending doom? No. But it is a good time to think about risk management. It really is. Remember, and I'm not saying this to talk our book or to get you to call in or to, you know, it's not. We're just trying to educate you. And what I'm sitting here saying is risk management is the name of the game right now. You have been engaged and you have benefited from the longest bull market in U.S. history. You've benefited from one of the biggest rises in terms of amplitude, in terms of how much the market has gained from the bottom. You're looking at the most richly valued stock market in history, including 1999 and 2000, including 1929. Remember, guys, the view is always best from the top. This is not a time to press on risk. Is it a time to time markets and get out? No. But you're going to feel like an idiot if this market drops by 30 or 40%, which, by the way, would take us back to a normal valuation, just an average valuation, right? A 30, 40% drop gets us back to average. And you're going to feel like an idiot if you're sitting there pressing on the risk going, oh, hey, why is our portfolio down 45%? Well, I just thought it was going to keep going up. You didn't realize it was the most expensive stock market in U.S. history? No, I heard some guy on the radio saying that. I mean, wake up, guys, wake up. Now is the time to play defense. Now is the time for risk management. And when you do it the way we do it, we can cut your fees by using our bond replacement, which is insured against loss, but also participates in market gains. I can't talk about performance, and I can't give you specific numbers, but these are types of products that have no limit to the upside. You participate with the market. When the market goes down, you stay flat. You're insured against loss. We're using that as a bond replacement. Why? The reason we invest in bonds is not because they're great. They're paying us 1.5%, right? If that, over the last 8 years. The reason we invest in bonds is for security. Well, these are safer. The other benefit they've got is instead of paying some advisor 1.5% to manage your bonds that are paying 1.5%, These things have no management fee. There's no upfront cost, no management fee. Insured against loss, no management fee, participation to the upside of the market, and with no limit on how much you can gain. We've had these things make 15, 16, 17% a year before during a really good market. So that's our bond replacement. Then our portfolio, we talked about this on last week's show, our stock portfolio, when the economy turns south, and due to the economic data, the stock portfolio has got defense built into it. So what we've got here is we've got a portfolio that costs significantly less, 40 to 50% less on average than our competitors. It's infinitely more safe because, you know, a good portion of it's insured against loss. The stock portion has a defense built into it that limits losses and gets defensive when markets turn down. And yet it's capturing all the upside. We're blowing away in terms of performance, the average stock bond portfolio. So anyway, this is the time for risk management, guys. You got to think outside the box. You also shouldn't be sitting there happy to pay your advisor 1.5% on bond funds that haven't even made 1% over the last, you know, 6-7 years. So we can get safer. We can lower fees and actually increase room to the upside. And Jerry, I don't know if you know this, but we've got Roger Ibbotson, one of the fathers of modern finance, coming on the show May 31st. I mean, this guy worked with Milton Friedman. He worked with Black and Scholes. I'm forgetting their first name, but they created the pricing model for Black-Scholes, the pricing model for options. And he was part of the Chicago group, the Chicago boys, where he worked with four Nobel laureates. He's written several books. He's like a father of modern finance. He's going to be on the show. And guess what he says? Use Zach's, you know, he doesn't say Zach's, but use these no fee, no cap, fixed indexed annuities as bond substitutes, which is what we've been telling people. So are you going to listen to some schmuck from Morgan Stanley tell you, oh, annuities are bad, while he's trying to sell you a bond portfolio that sucked wind for the last 7 years and you've paid him more in fees than he's made on it or than you've made on it? Or are you going to listen to Roger Ibbotson, the father of modern finance who cut his teeth under Milton Friedman? I mean, guys, it's the biggest no-brainer in investing. And we're all about the risk management. So if you want to lower your risk, increase your upside, and drastically reduce your fees, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can catch us out on Twitter at KYR Radio. If you want a portfolio review, call us. If you want to just kind of feel it out, if you want to get the Common Sense Investing booklet, call us. If you don't want to call us, if that's a little bit too out there, you can just shoot us an email. We can do correspondence over email. We can do a portfolio review over email. But guys, just get a second opinion. There's a better way to do things. I'm getting emotional here. No, I told the story 2 weeks ago. Jerry, you weren't here, but my mother-in-law, she just retired. God bless her. Sweetest lady in the world. She just retired, moved her 401k over. Her 60-40 stock bond portfolio over the last 11 years has averaged 5.01%. She could have made more in U.S. treasuries over the same period of time. And it's no knock against her. She's doing what people told her. What killed her performance, guys? It was the bonds. She's made nothing on them in 9 years. And rates haven't even started going up. That nothing's going to turn to negative when rates start going up. And all the while, you're going to be still paying the same schmuck 1.5%. Anyway, there's a better way to do things, guys. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Stick with us, and thanks for listening. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
A lot of people with near or over $1 million in assets will mistakenly pay more in taxes in a long-term care situation than what it would have cost them to set up an insurance plan to pay for the care needed. Due to recent changes in the Pension Protection Act, these new asset-based plans guarantee a tax-free benefit for long-term care and pay your estate back with interest if you never use it. But more importantly, it's about having a plan. All your children have to do is carry out your wishes, and you're not a burden on them. That's why I love the advice my wife and I got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. Brian has an asset-based class coming up Monday, May 20th in Bellevue. This class is aimed at individuals and couples who have accumulated close to or more than $1 million in assets and may be considering self-funding their long-term care costs in the future. Learn why that's not the best idea. Seating will be limited for this special asset-based class on the 20th in Bellevue. Reserve your spot, 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right. Welcome back to the show, and thank you so much for joining us. Got a lot to talk about, as we talked about in the market update. Several different things to hit on. But a couple of things we left out of the market update. Hey, you guys know my feelings on Tesla. Even though we had the, you know, like I said in the first segment. Look, my views on Tesla have not changed. Because I look at the financial setup. And now, I digress. I got ahead of myself. Okay. What, the things that changed were my perception of value that Tesla has. I think that the autonomous driving part of it will eventually rule the day, meaning that whoever, I mean, just think about the productivity. So now we'll use me as an example. I think I'd be a perfect example of this. If a fully autonomous car came out, meaning that you could really get in it, sit in the back seat. You know, what was the name of the, I'm forgetting what the name of the robot was on 2001 Space Odyssey. Remember, he's always talking to the robot. His name, you know, if I had that, you know, we'll call it Jeeves, right? Now, and see, I'm blanking out all over. What was Batman's butler named?
Alfred.
Yeah, right. So maybe I'd, what's that? Hal. God darn it. I'm too young to have my memory failing me, pal. And people, if you didn't notice, this is why we got Darren on the board. Best in the biz. Anyway, if I had my own Hal driving me around, the amount of productivity that I would save, I put 40,000 miles on my car last year, meeting you guys, going up and down I-5, all over the place, crazy. But if I could sit in the back seat and truly have, you know, Hal drive me around town, the amount of time I would save, we've actually looked at this before, the business could justify, you know, the business would have to pay the expense. You know, you could pay $100,000, $110,000 for a car like that just because the time that you would recover, obviously it's a business expense, you'd write it off. But my whole point being is that the winner of this whole game, in my estimation, is going to be whoever gets autonomous driving right. And so the way that I have changed my thinking about Tesla is I no longer think, based on what I know now, that they're going to go bankrupt. Now, remember, there's a lot of room in there, though. And what I mean by that is I think Tesla will continue to exist based on the information I have now, excluding the possibility that there's fraud. And look, these are possibilities. If you made me bet one way or the other on Tesla, I don't think that there's outright fraud going on, but there very well could be. And the reason why I say that is because Musk is just, he's so fast and loose. And it just doesn't paint a good picture. And we've gone over this before. So, you know, I didn't get hit in the head. I don't all of a sudden think that Tesla's a great investment. I'm not recommending it, right? We can't recommend stocks, buys or sells on the show. It's not what we do. But, you know, you got to know the other side of the story. And I still think the finances of it. If Tesla survives, I don't think it's going to survive in its current state. But I do think that their assets, that their knowledge, that their technology, from what I can tell now, will live on in some capacity. Maybe somebody buys them out. Maybe there's a restructuring of the balance sheet. Maybe they go private. You know, they're certainly not going to go private at $420 a share. You know, going back to the whole funding secured tweet from Elon Musk. But you know, I think that in some way or some capacity, based on what we know now, they will survive. But this is why we've always go back to valuation, guys, because at the end of the day, the valuation doesn't make sense. Okay, and the hardest thing for investors, now we're going to pivot. It's not just about Tesla, but the hardest thing for investors to get their head around is valuation. And not so much with our clients, because I think our clients tend to be more conservative by nature. They like the idea of risk management. You know, they recognize the things wrong with the way modern portfolios are being built, and they're more long-term investors. But you run into these people that go, look, well, Zach, you said it's overvalued, but it's still gone up over 40%. You know, and hey, look, that's the game. I don't know what somebody else out there that we would call a price-insensitive buyer, I don't know what they'll pay for it. But what I do know, as a student of history, is that eventually assets reflect their intrinsic value. And guys, nothing has changed. That hasn't gone away. And as I've said so many times before, I know it's tough during periods of times like this. It's tough for me. You know, you want to get in there. You see these meteoric rises on these stocks over short periods of time. Here's what I'm telling you, though. It's going to go away as fast as it came. It just will. And people are like, oh, Zach, you've been saying that for 2.5 years. Or 3 years. Yeah, it's true. But look at what's happened to a lot of the stuff we've talked about. Remember, we warned you about Netflix. We warned you about some of those high-flying stocks. Look at them. They got slaughtered. We warned you about Boeing. They got slaughtered. Not slaughtered, but 20% off its high, something like that. It's down as much as 30% off its high at one point. Valuation matters, guys. And in periods of times like this, it doesn't. But it doesn't mean, you know, the analogy we always use is you might have the best arm in the world. You might be able to throw a baseball higher than anybody else. You might be able to throw it so high we can't see it. But I'm not going to sit there and make a bet that it's never going to come down. I know it is. Might take longer. And this is where we really beat over the heads of, you know, look, not just our clients, but our employees. I was having that conversation with my analyst just the other day, just saying, hey, nope. We got to stick to the game. We got to stick, because at the end of the day, that's all it is. It's value. And we look at so many of these stocks out there today. We were talking about Walmart in the opening segment or the market update. I mean, look, you know, if you really buy the story that now Walmart is a tech company and they're going to compete. I mean, look, I've got a bridge to sell you. And it's no knock on Walmart, but guy, this is so frothy. This is so top of the market. And as I say that, people go, again, Zach, you've been saying that for 2.5 years. Well, guys, the market's gone nowhere for 18 months. And if you want to look at it on a technical basis, it looks like a rolling top. Now, am I saying that I think everything's about to collapse? No. Because if you put a gun to my head, and I've said this before, but I think that you're probably going to see another run. And the reason I think that is, now we're speculating. I want to make this very clear. We're speculating. Because the truth is, when markets get this overvalued, nobody knows. I mean, it's kind of like the butterfly effect, right? Butterfly flaps its wings, and 30 days later, there's a nuclear war, right? It's chaos theory. So anything could start it, right? What started the 2000 tech collapse? Nobody knows. Just selling. Eventually, people went, wait a second. You know, there's the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? You never know when that moment is, but you know it's going to come. It's what Minsky refers to as the Minsky moment. When Minsky meant about that, and Minsky, if you guys don't know, I do a Google search on Minsky and read about him, because he did his work. I want to say, oh, geez, I'm dating or I'm talking a little out of school. I think Minsky's primary work was done in the 80s, I want to say, but he really came back into fashion during the financial collapse because he had this idea of instability is the issue. And he started defining a period of time where something was unstable, that all it needed was a push, and that eventually the push would come, right? And we've talked about this on the show before about balancing a pencil on your finger. Gust of wind comes down and blows the pencil off, And you look at the guy next to you and you go, well, what knocks the pencil off my finger? And he goes, oh, the gust of wind. You go, no. The gust of wind just happened to be the thing. But what inherently caused the pencil to fall off my finger is it wasn't stable. Right? So maybe it's a gust of wind. Maybe it's a bus that drives by that goes through a mud puddle and the water splashes. Right? The point is that it's unstable. It's not when, it's if. Or excuse me, it's not if, it's when. And when you see valuations like this, that I mean, it's just what it is. And we talked about Zoom Technologies. You know, the viability or the profitability of their long-term business, that's not really what I'm looking at. What I'm looking at is saying, if you think your addressable market is $43 billion, and remember, it's in a prospectus, so that's pie in the sky in its very nature. But if you think it's $43 billion, and you did $300 million in revenue, how in the world? I don't need to know anything else. How in the world do you justify a $22 billion valuation? And this is where, look, I even see weathered investors start buying into this late in cycles like we currently are, like I believe we are. It's because you get fatigued. You watch these things go up and you capitulate. You go, I can't take it anymore. I'd rather be a part of the party. And you got to fight that. You got to fight it. You got to think clear-headed. Because to some degree, guys, your future, your history, or excuse me, your family's future, it relies on it. This is not the time to be imprudent. When no one cares about value, that's what we need to be focused on. And to steal a line off the gentleman that just happens to be sitting next to me in the studio right now, in a different studio, but next door to us right now, Michael Medved, right? You focus like a laser beam. And, you know, it goes back to Buffett, right? We talk about Buffett all the time. Where we buy when others are fearful. We sell when others are greedy. And people, we've never seen markets more greedy. I mean, just think about that. Walmart now with 45. And over the same period of time, their earnings have dropped in half. And everybody out there, every CEO, every investor that's buying into this overpriced nonsense, they're all betting on the come. And so what I would pose to you as a listener is I would say, what do you think's more likely? Do you think that we've got a new paradigm now where value doesn't matter? And revenue growth is all that matters and profits don't matter. It's the new paradigm, man. Do you think that's really what's happened? Or do you think that this is just bubble behavior like we've seen so many times? And you know, look, I'm sure there are people out there going, well, I do think it's different. Hey, that's fine. You look, anything's possible. I'm just one to bet. I'm just one to bet that it isn't different this time. And then the other thing is, too, is even if you think it's different, you need to accept the fact that you're no longer investing, you're gambling. Because all you're doing is just betting that this object, this stock is going to go up. And based on what? And you go, well, they're going to double their revenue next year. Well, great. If you look at a company like Zoom Technologies, that means they've got $600 million in revenue or $650 million in revenue and a $22 billion market cap. That still doesn't make any sense. And in a $43 billion addressable market, meaning that you're already building into the price of that stock that you think they're going to control over 50% of their market. When they're competing against established players like Skype. And again, this is nothing against the company. It's not a personal issue at all. We're just using this as examples. And guys, there's these examples all over the place. And this is a time for sobriety. And it's disheartening for me because I really do. I want the best for people. Look, nobody likes the fact that people lose money. Maybe there's some sadists out there that I don't know. But I'm not one of those guys. I'm not rooting for a market collapse. It's not even good for my business. Remember, as accounts lose value, we're a fiduciary. So that's how we get paid. Market's going up, it's easier. But what we have to do, we've got to have those sober moments where we step back and go, wait a second, guys, this doesn't make sense. Because what I am not prepared to do, what I will not do, is I'm not going to look our clients in the face and say, well, here are the reasons why I thought this time was different. Here are the reasons why we paid completely ridiculous prices, and that's why you just lost 70%. go, I can't lose 70%. Go pull up a chart of the NASDAQ from 99 to 2001. Go, well, look at the S&P from the end of 2007 to the bottom of March 2009. And yet everybody's running around act like, it's an anomaly. Can't happen. We're back on the... I know. I do this all the time, right? Look, and I've said it before. It's not new news. People listen to the show all the time. It just gets crazier and crazier. And you think you're starting to see rationale come back in, and you see these things spike. And this all got going with Tesla, right? What do we've been talking about Tesla for months, maybe a year, year and a half. And I'm not just talking about the stuff that we get right to make ourselves look good. But if you've listened to the show, you've listened to us beating it up, right? Well, when we really got fired up about Tesla, it was about a year ago when we really started beating the tables on it. Because I really didn't, I thought it was overpriced, but it didn't really get in stupid till a year and a half ago or so. And when we really got fired up is when that tweet came out that put the stock to a record high, 389, I think is what it was. It's at 211 today. You're down almost 45%. Tesla. Here's the crazy thing. You're still looking at one of the most expensive car manufacturers in the world. I mean, you've still got a $38 billion market cap. There's a lot more pain left. This isn't priced in. And these things happen fast, guys. Everybody always thinks that they're going to get out in time, that they're going to sell at the right time. And the most frustrating part about it all to me, like I was alluding to earlier, now hopefully we're making a dent. I know we are with our clients, but hopefully we're making a dent. Hopefully, if you're listening to this show, and it's not about me being right, but hopefully if you're listening to the show, you're reminded of the history that you have witnessed over the last 30 years. Hopefully you're reminded of everybody and their mother making money hand over fist, 100% in a day, IPOs in 99. Guess what, guys? That's going on right now. You got IPOs that are up 230% in the last 2 weeks. We're here again. Maybe you remember 2007, everybody's a house flipper all of a sudden. Everybody and their mother is a Chip and Joanna Gaines, right? Buy real estate. They're not making any more of it. We're here again, guys. Now, for a variety of different reasons, mainly central banks, could it last longer? It could. But don't count on it. And just know, if you're doing that, you're gambling. And I'll tell you what, especially if you're a home gamer, you might have done well. You might have made good money. But you've got a level of confidence that I don't have, and I do this for a living. I do it with tens of millions of dollars. And the most frustrating thing is that we know through history and research that value, buying undervalued assets, outperforms every other strategy over time. Everyone. Momentum, sick, you name it. Buying value stocks at the right price, win over time. And yet you get into areas like this. You know, I even see guys like Jim Cramer talking about it. You barely ever hear them talk about valuations. And that's the thing that kills me. And if you're at home watching CNBC every day, getting your tips from Jim Cramer, thinking it's good, I'll point you back to his record from in 2000 when he gave his, and I've said this on the show before, and it's no knock on Jim Cramer, just factually speaking, 2000, the 10 stocks you got to own, 8 of them don't even exist anymore. They went bankrupt. And despite what Jim Cramer says, this is one issue I do have with him, is he sits there and he said he warned people to get out of the market in 08. Jim Cramer was sitting there telling people to buy the banks on the weakness, and he did not get sheepish about markets until the Dow was in the $10,000 range. And at that point, it was already down 35%. Thanks a lot, Jim. Thanks for the forward warning on that one. If you're relying on these other people, everybody gets caught up in it. And the way you can tell is just watch Mad Money for an episode. Listen to how many times he talks about value. At the end of the day, nothing else matters. And this is where we go into our risk management philosophy. And this is where we tell clients, look, you're getting obsessed about chasing the markets. You got to make hay while the sun shines. Look, I get it. This is a performance business. I'm with you. But you've got to be willing to know, or you got to be willing to accept the fact that you're taking a ton of risk. And you're also playing in a game, you know, you're betting against the house. You're betting against history. You're comfortable taking risks that I'm not. And you're, and like I said, most importantly, you're betting. We're not even investing anymore. We're just betting. Just, hey, greater fool theory. I think someone else is going to come pay me a higher price. Why? Well, because it's been going up. Great. There's a thesis to bank your future on. So, you know, and the other thing that kills me is that greed that plays. And it's not because I disagree with these people. It's not because I disagree with people that don't agree with our take. It's because I don't want to see it happen. I don't want to see these people get wrecked. Because what the average investor doesn't know is that, yeah, we got to make money when markets are going up. But the number one way to increase your returns over the long run, which is what we're all trying to do, guys, right? We're trying to fund retirement. You got to keep these things in mind. What are we trying to do? You're not a hedge fund that's trying to beat the market every year. Now, does that mean we don't try to? No, of course we do, but within reason. And with the right type of stuff, with stuff that's got value, with stuff that's got intrinsic value, with stuff that's not going anywhere. And that's, like I said earlier, this is the toughest part to try to convey to investors, because if we play it by the numbers, if we look at returns, and if our goal really is to maximize returns and lower risk over the, you know, the next 10, 15, 20 years, which is what we're talking about, right? Funding retirement. Then the number one easiest way to do that is to limit your losses. And the scariest thing about where we're at right now is that's not what anybody's thinking about. And that's precisely when you should. And or you're just going to become a statistic. If you can't tell, I get a little fired up about it. Just because there's so much irresponsible advice. And this gets into our risk management model. You know, I sit there and listen to these people talking about, we talk about our bond replacement strategy, the fixed indexed annuity. Yeah, I said it, annuity. Right? You're like, oh, my advisors told me they're horrible. I heard Ken Fitch. Here's the deal. We got it. Just hear me out. We have an interview with Roger Ibbotson. And I talked about this in the first, in the market update. But Roger Ibbotson is arguably, he's mid-70s now, he's arguably one of the most accomplished, brightest, respected financial minds alive. The guy was part of the Chicago Boys, is what it was called. And I know I talked about this, but I really want to, if you can't tell, I'm really pumped to have him on. It's a good get. He does not do a lot of media appearances. And a guy like me that grew up in the brokerage industry, father and grandfather had a brokerage firm back in 1983, literally grew up in the industry, never thought about doing anything else, studied finance and economics at PLU. The idea that, and I've met him once in New York, and I got to talk to him a little bit, but it was kind of in a round table. It was about a year and a half ago. Super nice guy, brilliant, obviously. But the idea that I get to sit down and have an hour-long conversation with Roger Ibbotson is kind of a mind blower to me, because he, like I said, this is a godfather of modern finance. And we've got his 16-page white paper out on our website talking about this, and he's going to talk about it on our show. And look, he knows just like I do. We know what the stigma around annuity is, and I get it. I used to sell against them. But it was a different environment. Why didn't we think annuities are bad? And hey, look, stick with me. I know a lot of you guys have heard the spiel before, but I just want to encapsulate this. And I'm not going to go off on a rant. Arguably, I'm on one already. But what he and I both understand the toxicity around it. We also know that we're taking risk. When we started doing this in 2012, nobody was doing it, and it was even harder. Now it's starting to gain acceptance, and watch, within the next 10 years, 90% of people you know are going to have these in their portfolio. But I just listened to an interview he did, one of the very few he did in the past 2 months. And the guy running it was an anti-annuity RIA guy, and he was just like me. He was excited to talk to Roger Ibbotson, and he was very respectful, but he brought up, he's like, so annuities, you're advocating them? And he just sat there, and it was pretty crazy. Because it was really edifying, because what he sat there and said is what I tell you guys on the radio show every single week. He just said, look at the scenario with bonds right now. You know, you're paying people to manage the bonds. You're going to yield less than the inflation rate. Rates have to go up at some point, so bonds are going to start losing money. It just doesn't make any sense to take that type of risk when you can take less risk, lower your fees, and get the upside of the equity markets with a guarantee against loss. This is Roger Ibbotson. So if you're one of those people sitting out there going, oh, and I meet him all the time, Zach, I enjoy your show, but I just don't do annuities. I think they're all... Listen, you got to open your mind. I didn't used to do them either. You need to listen. You got to educate yourself, because if you understood them, I tell people this all the time. If you understood it, when we sit down and talk to clients that get it, that become clients, the conversation, no matter how big of a skeptic they are, almost every time the conversation switches and it goes from me telling them why I think this would be good in their portfolio to them sitting there going, Zach, why don't we put it all in there? And I go, no. And then when I hear other competition, who I really honestly, guys, I don't really pay attention to it. I've heard a lot of people saying negative things about us. I don't even know who they are, which is kind of disheartening, just because I'm never going to dog the competition. I think it's stupid to focus on it. You know, it's Frosty taught me that, going to PLU, Frosty Westering. We worry about us. We worry about what we do. I could not care less about what other people at other firms are doing. I couldn't. The other reason why I don't really care about it is I was sitting there doing a review with one of our clients the other day, bought one of these products for us, used it as a bond replacement in his portfolio. I got to say, I'm going to be careful about how I say this, but the products we use every day, over the last 3 days, he's up in the double-digit returns, high, and I'm not talking 11%. Started with about $300,000 in the account. He's pushing four. This is his bond money that he's not paying a fee on that's insured against loss. Everybody goes, well, what are you making the market during the same time? And I go, no, this is where it gets back to risk management. Not all returns are created equal, guys. That's a stupid way to look at it. They go, what do you mean, Zach? And I go, do you have 100% of your money in stocks? They go, no. And I go, then what are we talking about? The stock market did better. What did your bonds do? Why do we own bonds? For security. Well, guess what? They're not insured against loss. So if you can double or even triple, and I'm not making guarantees, I'm just saying, talking about historical average rates of return. If you can average between 5 to 6.5 and be insured against loss, not pay a fee, what in the world would you be taking interest rate risk, default risk, credit risk? Why would you be taking that risk in a bond portfolio that's yielding 1.5%, or maybe it's even yielding 2.5 or 3%, but you got to pay your advisor 1.5%. You got the internal fees of the bond fund that you're paying. So now you're hoping in a year where rates stay steady, you make 1%. I mean, guys, and this is the thing that frustrates me about. I've said this about the bond portfolio and these other people out there still utilizing these as, quote unquote, the defense or the safe part of the portfolio. If they were really fiduciaries looking out for your best interest, they'd tell you to park the money in 3% CDs, right? Because CDs can't lose. The CDs don't pay expenses. Why don't they tell you that? Because they can't charge you an expense fee on the CD. And not to bring it up, but I mean, 3%, you know, that's no great shakes either. But what if you had a way where you were insured against loss, you paid no fees, no upfront fees, no ongoing management fees, you got 50 to 60% upside of the stock market with no cap, meaning in a year where 2013 happens, market's up 31, you're up 15, 16, 17% while you're insured against loss. Market's up 10, you're up, you know, somewhere between 4.5 to 6. Insured against loss, not paying fees. Market drops by 60%. You don't make any money, but you stay flat. Just if I could have somebody explain to me why that isn't superior to a bond fund, I don't care what it's called. You call it trash. You could call it a dumpster. I don't care what it is. Money's agnostic. It doesn't care how it gets made. And it just blows my mind. I go over these portfolios all the time where people are loaded up in bonds. Why do you have so much in bonds? Well, I got to be secure. Secure? On a real basis, on an inflation-adjusted basis with interest rates where they're at, there's no security. Bonds are a guaranteed loss over the next 20 years. Anyway, long story short, if you've been a skeptic about this, you know what? Take it up with Roger Ibbotson. And if you go talk to your advisor and he's still pushing back, sit there and ask yourself, who do I trust more? This advisor who doesn't even have a finance degree, or Roger Ibbotson, who cut his teeth with Milton Friedman and the guys that invented the Black-Scholes options pricing model, was part of the Chicago Boys, was part of that original crew that's had umpteen million published works, runs a billion-dollar hedge fund. A godfather of modern finance is sitting there going, yeah, it's makes a whole lot of sense. Can't really see how bonds could possibly beat it. And it's certainly better on a risk basis because we're guaranteed against loss. You know, we just talk about the averages. The bond complex could blow up. You could be looking at 35 losses in your bond fund. And if you don't think that that's possible, guys, on average, bonds as an asset class were down 25% or so in 2008, 2009. And rates were higher. You got to wake up, guys, because I don't know when this is ending, but we're getting closer. And here's the beautiful part of it, guys. This is the beauty of risk management. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I talked to you about this, Darren, but we're in the initial plannings next year of doing a Know Your Risk radio roadshow. Now, I haven't spoken to Dory about it, but I think Dory's going to join us, at least at a few of these. But and it's not going to be a solicitation type event. It's not going to be about getting business. We're even tell people you can bring your kids. What we really need to do, and it's what I'm writing my book about right now, is the idea of risk management, taking the way that we manage money on an institutional level and taking it to retail investors, because the retail investor portfolio that you're in, that 98% of you are in, it is garbage. It's not going to do its job. It's not mathematically possible. The stocks may perform. Probably not over the next 10 years, just based on valuations, based on the length of this bull run. But look, what is not going to perform? What I am telling, it's mathematically impossible for it to perform the same way it has over the last 40 years is the bonds. There's a better way to do things. And remember, people hear risk management, and I've heard that with clients that don't end up going with us, I hear the same thing every time. You know, it's just I understand, Zach, we might come back to you, but you know, it's the conservative route, and I really get what you're doing, and maybe we should do that, but we just want to try to make some more money here, right? But remember, guys, that's not risk management. Risk management means, if we're wrong and this thing doesn't end, great. Rates are going to go up, the bond portfolios are going to get smoked, and our annuity bond replacement and our stock portfolios are going to blow the doors off the traditional stock bond portfolio, and they're going to do it on average of about 40% less in cost, because whatever we put over there in the annuity, we're not paying expenses on. Gosh darn it, you can tell I get fired up. Because it's just better. It really is. We first started doing this, you know, there was some trepidations because you grow up your entire life going, these are horrible, stay away from annuities. Well, interest rates go to zero, you got to change the way you think. And we've been thrilled with the performance. And guys, if you don't have a risk management strategy, if you're still relying on bonds, which have killed your performance, by the way, killed it, and you're paying too much in fees, if that's you, and you're sitting there going, Zach, I hear you, these valuations are getting out of hand, it's time for a risk management strategy. And you know what, Zach, if you're wrong and this market goes up for another 10 years, I get you, we're going to make more money. If that's you, if you want to make more in the up markets, you want to lose less in the down markets, and you want to pay 40 to 50% less in fees in the meantime, which I don't know who wouldn't, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can set up an appointment with me. You can get our free booklet. You can get the Roger Ibbotson white paper. I'd suggest reading up on that before we interview him on the 31st. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Follow us at KYR Radio on Twitter. And then if you don't want to talk to us in person, guys, you don't want to call 866-779-RISK, you can email us. We can do this back and forth over email. But get a different opinion. Get a second opinion and figure out how you can get higher returns with a much higher level of security and cut your fees. It's going to be worth it. Anyway, we got to run. See you next week. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back with a great interview next week. I'm not going to tell you who it is. You got to wait. Anyway, Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.